college and career ready was like was the buzzword, right? They had to be college and career ready. Never mind if they're college and life successful, which we don't really seem to focus on.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Kick Some Class Podcast Season 2. And in this episode, I've got a special treat for you. But this show, the Kick Some Class Podcast, is for you, the teacher, educator, and it is designed to help you kick some class at home, in school, and in life. And we're going to cover all those things. In Season 2, I got some really great interviews lined up for you, as well as some great solo episodes coming up. Today, I've got a special guest. He is a speaker, a trainer, an author, and just an all-around good guy, a dad. His name is Carl Hooker, and he'll be joining me in just a second. Awesome. So, Carl Hooker, welcome to the Kick Some Class Podcast.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's great. So, you know, just starting off in education, if somebody is kind of living under a rock and doesn't know who you are, I could go through your website and bio and read stuff off, but how would you kind of succinctly put that, maybe your path to where you are now?
Well, let's run it with numbers. So, 24 years in education, so I'm just 1 year behind you. I have written 7 books, mostly about instructional technology, the last one about failure and risk-taking. I have 3 daughters. I host 3 podcasts and consult, and I own 2 bars, a little-known fact, one in Austin and one in Houston. And I'm in Austin, Texas. I've been here since I was 18 years old, so I consider it my home, like everybody else that moves here.
Yeah. That's awesome. I didn't, the bar thing's intriguing. We might get into that one.
A whole nother side. We talk about teacher self-care later. Yeah. Let's talk about that with a bar.
Yeah. It's funny because that's, I got into home brewing about 10 years ago quickly went from hobby to, I might need a second job if, you know, or find another hobby because but it's fun. You got to have something that feeds you. Yep. Right. So
absolutely.
Awesome. Cool. So, you know, I've got the book here, Ready, Set, Fail, which I love, but aside from, you know, what's obvious in the title, what was it that kind of drove you at this point in your career, 24 years in, to say, hey, we need to talk about this in education?
I'll be honest. It was mostly my kids. I mean, I've got an eighth grader, fifth grader, and now fourth grader, all girls, all with the last name Hooker. So yes, jokes aside, yeah, pray for them soon. Oh. They'll be married very soon. I saw a lot with their schools, and I've been in successful schools, and I've been in schools that have been rebuilding. But what I've seen over and over again is this desire to really promote kind of compliance and conformity over creativity. And you see it a lot in schools, and some of it has to do with state testing. Some of it has to do with the way we've taught our teachers. And so what the book is about is really how do we break from that and not reinventing everything, because we know that curriculum is going to be there and grades are going to be there. And I don't try to tackle those right away. It's more about how do we just change the tenor of which we ask questions in the classroom, and how do we invite kids to make mistakes and be okay with it by modeling it ourselves as teachers. And so there's little steps in there. There's other barriers that I list in the book about different things of creativity and how do you overcome them. Most of those, honestly, are personal stories of mine that I've also had to overcome to be a creative person. Because let's just face it, there's some days, I don't know if you feel this way, there's some days where the creative juices just aren't there. So you can't make it happen. But for various reasons. So I guess, again, back to the core reason of why I wrote it, I think it's because I feel like there needs to be a shift in schools and where we're going, because I think we need to be raising the next generation of entrepreneurs, not just the next generation of kids that can figure out how to get straight A's, which is nice, but that's not for everybody.
No, I'm so glad you said that. It's the journey for me was, you know, I'm 47, my daughter's 4, and it was
me too.
Like, 47. Dude, is it hypocritical of me to not want to send my daughter through the system that I love? And I mean, and I'm a weirdo. I do all sorts of crazy stuff, always have in the classroom, willing to take risks. But I saw that same thing. It's wait a minute. If you figure out the game and you're good at the game and checking the boxes, you're going to get good grades, but you may not be able to solve a whole lot of problems that aren't scripted by the adult at the front of the room. And I love that. And I don't know if you saw this with your kids, that fear of failure. I mean, I'm seeing it now at 4.
Oh,
it's like, did I do this? You know,
well,
and
like, we do.
I hope I didn't.
Yeah. We have a big saying in our house that no is the first hello, which is if you never ask a question, the answer is always going to be no. If you never ask someone for something, it'll always be no. If you do ask them, there's a chance that it's no, but there's a chance that it's also yes. Now, this is a dangerous line to toe if you're a parent, because now that they're getting into their teen tween years, they decide, Dad, can I have TikTok? And I'm like, no. And then they're like, but you said no is the first hello. And I'm like, you're right. So now pitch it to me. Tell me why it's important to you. Tell me what it does for you. How does it enrich your life? Make a case, make a pitch, and I may accept it. And sometimes they pitched at me and I've said, you know what? You can absolutely have that sleepover. Yes, you can actually have 10 friends over because you've offered to buy pizza for all of them with your allowance. Right. That's fine. If you're going to do that, fine. You've pitched it to me, I'll say yes. But it's you're right. And it starts at about that age of four, Brian. You get that personality starts to form. Oh. I mean, at this age, at four, 75% of, is it a girl, boy?
She's a girl, yeah.
Girl, okay. 75% of her personality has now formed, which is... So what you see ain't going to change much from now on, which is good and bad. I mean, I have some hard-headed kids.
Please don't let my wife hear that, because I won't hear the end. This is your fault here, buddy.
Just hold that in your back pocket and then blame her when it happens. No.
That's right. You know 75% of what we're seeing.
It's here. We're there. We're done.
Oh, well, that's
funny
amazing.
Too. You talk about that, but just real quickly back on that story, you were talking about the idea of the grades. Another thing that slapped me across the face was when I do exit interviews with seniors at the school I worked at, Westlake High School here in Austin. And a couple of them, I got them into kind of in a room and I said, hey, listen, tell me about some of these classes you took this year in the last several years of your life. And a lot of them would point out there's certain teachers that they would take. And it wasn't because they were the most engaging or enriching teacher. They were a lot of the time. But usually it was because the teacher would post the notes to the quiz on Monday that they could rehearse and record and memorize and then take that quiz on Friday. And I said, well, did you learn anything from that? And they said, yeah, we learned how to get an A, which got us to college and went a step further. So like you, I'm kind of in that mode of questioning even higher ed. And it's, you know, heresy for an educator to say, don't go to college. But I'm like, it's not for everybody. Why do we force feed that on our kids? I don't think we need to.
Yeah, I just saw two things. This one is a 19-year-old kid who's editing video. And he's pulling in $35 to $40 an hour.
Brilliant.
I mean, anytime, I don't know where he is, you know, I am in New York State, taxes are kind of high, but that's still paying adult bills, you know, and he can pick and choose and not be tied down to a career. So I think some of those skill sets are going to come out. And if you're already good at it, I interviewed Josh Feinsilber from GimKit. I mean, here's the kid.
Awesome. That kid invented the whole thing. Yeah.
You know,
just blew up.
Yeah. And it's funny because I asked him, what'd your parents think about not going to college? And he hesitated. I'm like, yeah, you know, they might watch this. You may not need to answer that. But it was kind of it's the sign of the times, you know? And so I love that. It's good. It's good stuff.
But why do we feel bad about it? Yeah. I would say, why do we feel bad about that too? I caught myself doing this with some lifeguards here this summer. Guys like, oh, you know, summer, senior year's over. Where are you going to college? And one of them kind of looked down at the ground and kind of started kicking the ground. I was like, what's the matter? He's like, he goes, that's the first thing that everybody asked me at this point in my life. And I said, you know what? You're right. I shouldn't start with that because it doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to go. But then I said, but here's the thing. It's setting you up for the future of when you're going to get married and when you're going to have kids, when you're going to have the job. I mean, it's part of the cycle of the social experiment that is living in this country. But so for him, that I took that deer and I said, you know what? You're right. I'm going to stop asking seniors like that first question. I'm going to instead ask them more about like reflect on your K-12 experience. You know, what's your summer going to look like? I mean, what's your plans? What do you want to do next? You know, instead of immediately assuming college is next.
Yeah, I made the mistake once. This is back when I had hair, of saying that college isn't for everybody. And the woman cutting my hair kind of went off because her son was in my class at the time. And and she was like, oh, he's not going to go down the path that his father went down. And I'm like, oh, did I just step in it big time?
Yes.
And, so I cut my own hair now, and this is pretty much it, you know? So
let's see. Easier to maintain.
Occasionally fire up the goatee and that's about it. So, but it's funny that, you got to that question before I got a chance to ask it, which was, you know, how much of your own parental thing came up and thought, whoa, you know, what's good for my kids, if it's gotta be good enough for everybody else's kids, you know, kind of thing. So it's a little bit, I feel that same thing, like, oh, how did I get here so late in my career? But at least I'm here now, you know, and that's where we're moving.
I'm with you. I mean, I made a lot of the same mistakes as a teacher too. And I think even as an administrator early in my career, college and career ready was like, was the buzzword, right? They have to be college and career ready. Never mind if they're college and life successful, which we don't really seem to focus on. We just focus on getting them ready for that next step. I think we should be thinking more long game, which is why I started, again, more of the background of why I wrote this book and then thinking about my own kids too. I mean, life success doesn't necessarily mean a 4-year degree for everybody.
Right. Yep. And for some people, if that's the course you pick, great, great, you know, but, options. I think we should be championing all of those. So that's good stuff. And so just getting back to this idea of failure, because, I think it's, we can only teach what we're leading, what we're modeling ourselves. And I know that's a little bit what we talk about in the book, but do you see resistance to that as you travel around and you train, that there's a resistance to failure, even in the mindset and culture of teachers? And so how are they going to be able to foster and model that if they're not, maybe I'm answering my own question, but I'm just curious if you could, you know, how often you see that.
Right. I think the culture is a big thing. And when I kind of address it in part of the book too, but you know, I talk about all these ways to overcome these fears or these ways to become more creative. But some of the things I don't really address head on is like time and money are always things that always hinder our creative element. I mean, when are we more creative? When are we not? What kind of time pressure, or as I call it, time famine, are we under at this moment in education? But also the culture, how do you overcome a culture? Maybe it's a grade level team that doesn't want you to step out of line too much. Maybe it's a principal that's like, you know what, stay in your lane. I've dealt with those bosses. I don't know if you have, but I've had those bosses that are like, there was a year that our superintendent, there was a hashtag called calm it down, Carl, because I would get really excited about stuff. And it was like, calm it down, Carl. So everyone knew that it was me getting wound up about, we need to break the system. When I hear status quo, it's like, it's a red flag for me. Now there are some things traditionally that we need to keep too, but what I would say is for those teachers that are struggling in those environments, it's going to take a lot more work, honestly. And I think part of it is, when I encounter these groups, it's generally not the teachers that are that way. It's generally the administrators that I've had a couple, I won't call them out, but just in the last few months, as I've been going around doing talks on Ready, Set, Fail, I'll talk about how as a principal or a school leader, you should model this by going into the classroom and guest teach is what I call it. Just be a guest teacher for a couple hours, even if it's just once a semester, because it gets your feet on the ground. It lets you experience what it's like to be a teacher and instructional leader. And I think every administrator should do this at least once. And when I do it, usually the crowd reacts with a cheer. Sure. Usually the administrators in the room give me that, thanks a lot, Carl. You just set me up here. And I'm like, you know what? And I spoke with a few of those on the side, and they're like, yeah, you just sell this out. And I was like, no. All I'm telling you to do is, if you can just take an hour or two of your semester and go do it for one classroom, what an impact that has. Not only does it see you being a servant leader, like I was at SeaWorld last weekend, and I just witnessed this guy walking around with a dustpan, and it had Byron on the side of his dustpan. And I walked to this guy, I was like, why does he got a named dustpan? And the guy comes up to me, an employee, goes, that's the president of the park. Wow. The SeaWorld Park president is walking around with a dustpan cleaning up trash for two reasons. One is to show that he's one of the people, but also his ears are now on the ground and he can hear everything that's going right or wrong with that park, because people just dismiss him. They see some old guy picking up trash. I'm like, what a brilliant, I mean, I was floored by that when I saw it last week. And like, that's an example. At least go out into the classrooms and do that. So it does sometimes, culture is a hard thing to overcome. And I address it in the book in one of the chapters about the work you have to go through to get something different out there. And it's just a lot more work than a person maybe has a lot more open or accepting culture.
Right. Right. Or they've got all these other immovable blocks that they feel like they have to, you know, I got to cover this. I've got to make sure I get this in. I've got so many grades, you know, like, and so it's like, that thing, instead of being the priority, kind of gets bumped down or pushed to the side, or like, so I'm out on grant now and I get to float around K-12 and do STEM coaching and instructional technology stuff. So they call it the grandpa job. I got all the fun and no responsibility.
Exactly. Like, you're not evaluating anybody. I call it the Tom Hanks from Big Job, where it's like, they give me all these toys, I play with them, and then I tell them what I think. Yeah.
Yep. My direct supervisor came by, and I, right at the exact moment, I was crashing a drone in a classroom. Like, well, this is educational. I'm like, oh,
fail, fail, recover. Yes. Celebrate it.
It's like a yard sale. It's that one that clips all together.
Oh, yes. Pieces, it just falls apart.
Oh man. So, but you know, what's funny is like, people are willing to have a teacher come in and they're willing to say, look, I'll do anything crazy as long as you're here to support me. So I think it's great to see, you know, if you had an administrator with that level, they're always, I've sort of had the same experience. They want you to innovate, but there's always, I think in some teachers, there's always that back of the mind, but what if, But what if it doesn't work? Innovate and succeed is different than innovate and let's take what happens. And so, yeah, I think it would go a long way. Right. You know, you're not setting them up in the room if you didn't believe in it. Right.
Right. And I think failure, if you don't learn from failure, then it truly is a waste of time. But I think sometimes that's the assumption people make is that if they fail, they mess up. They just wasted all their time. But if you learn from that failure, I would argue if you get a data point from it or some sort of, ah, now I know how to do this better, then it's not a failure at all. One of the best examples of this, I had a principal once at a middle school who she basically told all the staff, she's like, take that one lesson, you know, that dream, your love lesson that you love to do all the time. Try to do something different. Move it up the ladder a little bit, make it a little more tech infused, whatever it is. And project based maybe. Yeah. Then I want you to reflect on it. And she asked them to do a blog, but she also gave them an out of saying you could do it on like a Google Doc because not everybody wanted to put that out there for the world.
Sure.
But then at the end of the year, when we do our summative, I want to come back and I want to ask you, hey, what was the thing you took a risk on? How did it go? What did you learn from it? What would you do better next time? And that putting that out there made them say, okay, this, she means it. She really wants us to do this because now it's part of our summative review.
Right.
So, and it was low, when you think about it, it's low hanging fruit. She's like, just pick one thing. But yeah. All the staff has to do it. So it's a group thing. It's not just one person has to do it. Like the one teacher that's in what we call, I forget what they call it when you're in trouble.
TP something.
Yeah, they put you on a track because you're like in trouble. But if everybody does it, then it's like, okay, we're all sharing this risk at the same time, which is kind of nice.
Right. It's funny. I had during COVID, we were cohorted up here. You got kids for, we went to block in middle school. And one day I looked out at the kids and they were just bored. I'm like, oh, so I literally capped the marker and I'm like, this sucks. I can see it on your face and it sucks for me. What do you guys want to do? And I just asked them, what do you want to learn about? I don't care. It could be anything science ish. Keep it kind of close. And that was my favorite lesson in 25 years or 24. And I made it every Wednesday when we came off of cohorting, we would get like one cohort for 3 days and then two and then two and then three. And every Wednesday, that's what I did for the rest of that year. And if I went back in the classroom today, I would probably do that 50% of the time because we went deeper, further. We spiraled things from fifth grade and we pre-covered eighth grade. I mean, it was outstanding. And I'm like, I had to let go. I was going to cover something or I could have just soldiered on and be like, well, I know it sucks, but we got 46.
Yeah, press minutes, on, so, turn to page 26 and read aloud. Number two student, go. Yeah. No, I feel like the same thing. If I'm bored this, by the way, is also my mantra when it comes to speaking and presenting. I'm always like, I try to envision myself as someone in the crowd. So when I'm talking, how am I responding to this? And I'm a person that has a very short attention span anyway. So I need to be kept. So I've, 180 slides going behind me. I'm narrating a movie while I'm also asking you to interact and turn to your neighbor and stand up and do crazy things. All in the ideology of building you up to be willing to take some sort of risk. So when you walk out, you're like, this isn't so bad. I took a few risks today. It wasn't painful. I didn't die. I didn't have to go up on stage and anything crazy. Maybe I can impart just a touch of this in my classroom with my students and kind of opening up that culture. And I think that's kind of the main message between my talk, which I've been doing before the book, to be honest, but now it's kind of formed into this all in one piece.
Yeah. That's awesome. So that whole, again, it's model what you're teaching, right? So it's good stuff. Just put your little crystal ball on. If you don't have one, I can tip my head down. You could.
I got one behind me. It's actually right there. You can see it. It's right behind me. Yeah.
That's awesome. So thinking forward, like in the next maybe 5 to 10 years, challenges for students and teachers in education, what do you see with where we're headed and, maybe what we might need to be preparing for?
Well, I think the teacher burnout thing is a real deal. I started a podcast called Forward to Different with the exact mantra being I was tired of hearing back to normal. So I wanted to go the opposite of that, Forward to Different. So I have the Forward to Different podcast, a Forward to Different blog series that's out about it now. And all it's doing is identifying the reasons, the pressures, the reasons why teachers are burning out. Pay is one of them, but it's not number one. Obviously, it's the Forward, it's the political pressures and all of that. I think that we've kind of made it with some band-aids this year. I mean, we're starting out here. My school district was 1,000 teachers short in Austin starting in June. And now they're, I think, almost down to 50. But I start worrying about, are they just going like, okay, yeah, you have a pulse? Go ahead. You can go into the classroom. Mm-hmm. And you see that nationally. There's certain states that are saying, yeah, we'll just put anybody in there. Florida's going to call in the National Guard to teach kids or whatever. Wow. I think that this year is the tipping point of that. I worry that what's going to happen is the teachers that are still in are going to feel more pressure because now they have more kids, a lot more pressure because they're the ones that are maybe the instructional masters of their campus. And so that's going to break them too. So I'm worried about that snowballing. So I think in response, what's going to end up happening is we're going to start seeing more of the shift to remote, more of the shift to just online learning, not maybe at elementary as much. But I do see that more and more. I mean, there's companies out there. Rex Academy is one that I do a lot of work with startup companies. They're one I work with that does computer science. And they now offer teachers. They're like, hey, you don't have, here's a curriculum. It's self-paced pretty much. But if you need a teacher, here's a teacher that can remote in and actually teach your kids. If you don't have someone that's qualified to teach computer science, we have, you know, and what's great is those kids get a really highly qualified teacher. And that teacher, by the way, gets paid more than a regular teacher because now they've got a flexible schedule. They're doing multiple classes across the country. I think that's a win-win. I think that's going to work for sixth grade up. I think elementary, we're going to have to figure out how to keep patching it together and mixing it up. Here in Texas, we got some schools going to the 4-day school week. That's probably going to help a little bit alleviate some pressure. And I think Colorado is already one of the states that has most of their schools are now 4-day schools, but we'll see how that goes. I'm nervous and I'm a very optimistic person, Brian, if I'm being honest, but I'm worried about it enough to where I'm like, I'm writing about it, trying to figure out how do we solve the riddle of keeping them in.
Yeah. And I keep thinking there's this parallel with healthcare. And it's really similar that the ones who stayed, and I'm not, believe me, I'm not vilifying anybody who took the last 2 years and said, that's it. I'm not teaching this environment anymore. Whatever you have to do, you know, you're more important than teaching, even though it's a part of your identity. It's not the whole thing. But so this idea of with the people who stay now do get a little bit more of a load. And so there's definitely some fallout and maybe it's almost, it's a negative snowball effect. That's just going to keep rolling if we don't do something about it. And, you know, I'm interested in some of the private sector type pop-ups with micro schools. And, you know, I just talked to the guys from ADOT school the other day and I'm fascinated with the freedom from a parent's side to choose for my daughter in 7-8 years when I think she could handle that, you know? But the other side is what happens to this beautiful building we have that,
center of a community. Yeah. I mean, it's where we all go. We started, one of the other things I forgot to mention in my bio is we launched a social media company, called K12leaders.com back in January. With the premise being, we started seeing this burnout coming and we're like, how do we build a community that supports teachers, supports educators, but doesn't steal data? I mean, it's four of us basically running this thing. There's no fancy technology or AI involved. But as a side part of that, we actually started a group called EduGigging, with a prompt, basically like a gig economy, but only for educators. Yeah. So how do we keep educators in education? The great ones, we want to keep them in those schools, but maybe we supplement them with a little, like, hey, here's a, we need you to write a 500 word review on a product, or we need you to, we want you to post some social media tweets about something if you can do it. Now, a lot of times there's conflict of interest and things like that.
Sure.
So figuring out how to get side work for educators, is what we're building the community to be now. It's fairly new. We've only got about 700 members in there right now, but the app launched a couple of months ago. I think that'll make it go faster. Once you have a mobile app, everybody loves that. But the idea again is keeping those great teachers in there. And if it's money is the problem, we don't want that to be the problem. How can we incentivize you, give you more bang for your buck, so you're not having to go work three jobs, you know, multiple hours. You could do this from the seat of your desk. You can take a day off on a Saturday and work on it. So I don't know that that's going to address the problem either. That maybe is more of a Band-Aid as well, but at least it's dipping our toe into fixing some of it somehow.
Right. Right. And I think it's going to be that, like, there's a multitude of solutions that are going to have to come together for each unique situation. Like, there are people I would say that you could double their salary and they still are like, I'm sorry, but my health, my family, my whatever is not worth money. And then there's others that are like, oh, cool. Well, now I can quit, you know, waiting tables, or I can quit this. And that would make a difference, you know, for maybe those that are a little younger than I am, have a little bit more energy in the tank, you know? So it's really interesting. I'm definitely gonna look into that. It's one of those things that I think we don't realize the skills that we build as educators that are directly related to our job, but we had to learn them on the job and they're applicable in other places.
Oh yeah.
And so finding another way, I've got several friends that went into copywriting and you know, one that's doing content creation for the car sales industry, which is just fascinating to me. What's out there if you are willing, hey, little plug, if you're willing to fail, you know,
take a risk.
I should be getting some rot. No, I'm kidding.
There we go. Kickbacks. See, put that in the edugigging community. We'll get you, we'll get you on the 10% kickback plan. No, I think you're right. I was funny. I heard Simon Sinek, you know, I have a love hate relationship with him. I love a lot of his work with the Y and all that, but there's some things I don't agree with. Anyway, one thing I heard him say the other day is he was interviewing this barista at a Four Seasons, and he said, "Hey, you just seem like you're really excited. I don't know if you saw this or not." And
I've heard the story. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, "Oh, you know, I love my job." And he's like, "Oh yeah, why do you love your job?" And he goes in all the reasons. Well, because every manager that walks by comes by and says, like, "How are you doing? Can I support you? You need a break?" Right. And then he goes and works at another one, I guess, across town, a different, not a Four Seasons, but a different hotel. And he hates it. And he said, it's because it's not the pay. It's not the job. It's just the management and the culture. And that tells you so much about what culture has to do with it. I've had team members of my team that stuck around that are far too talented to be instructional coaches just on a campus. But when I left, they ended up becoming directors at other school districts. But sure. I felt like in some ways, like I felt bad. I was like, "I'm holding you back." Like, no, we just love working here. Like, we just want to stay. And, you know, I was like, "You could do so much more." And like, "No, we love it." And I was like, "Okay, that's a compliment to me." But also, you know, part of it is how you build that culture and really recognize their talents, I think, is a big part of it too.
Right. And I like that acknowledgement. I forget, I'm always listening to, you know, several books at a time, but this, that piece of that human beings is the one thing we don't get that we probably desperately crave in all avenues of life is acknowledging not what you did, but who you are. And to see that is powerful. I love that, you know, and it's interesting that, like, who knows, maybe that being ready for those other positions was a fact of staying and being loyal. And then they realized, "Hey, if I can't replace it, I might as well go create it somewhere else." And I think that's a really awesome thing to do too. So, one of my last couple questions here, just if you have is there like a life quote? Just, you know, it's maybe your, I don't know if it's email signatures or cheesy. I don't care. I'm still overusing them. But
it's not a Kramer quote from Seinfeld. No. I guess my life quote is students. I wrote this in the book too, but it's students won't take risks unless teachers take risks. And then I flip it on its head and I say, teachers won't take risks unless leaders take risks. Yeah. And so again, pushing that out there and saying, "Hey, it's one thing for you to say it. You got to go out and do it."
Good stuff. So, if somebody wants to connect, you know, look out for the book or connect with you more online, in person, wherever you might happen to be, how can they do that?
Well, you can look at me on Twitter at Mr. Hooker. Don't follow Hooker. That's a different person. That's an account that'll get you kicked out of work. be careful with that name. I have a website, carlhooker.com, a blog, hookedoninnovation.com. You can see all my podcasts on there. And now k12leaders.com, which is our social media platform. Again, I'm just at Carl because I got awesome. I got to be one of the starting people. It's really cool to be a part of a social media company as it launches, because it's like LinkedIn had 400 and something members their first year, and we're keeping ahead of them. That's our goal.
Yeah.
It's been kind of fun to be a part of that community as it grows. It's not your typical social media platform. So yeah, any of those spots. If you can find a platform that has social something on it, even on TikTok, yes, at Hooker Tech. It's pretty embarrassing, but I'll admit that I've done some crazy videos and dances already, just to make my kids happy. Awesome. Got to learn it. I got to walk the walk if I'm going to tell them they can do it. Yeah.
It's funny. When you mentioned it earlier, I had a couple of friends pushing me. They're like, you know, the growth, you got to go TikTok. And I don't know if I should bleep this out, but I'm like, it just seems like numbnuts and sluts on there. And I don't want anything to do with that. And so, but then as I got on there, I'm like, no, it's who you follow. I'm like, okay, cool. I guess because I would turn on the app and I'd be like, what is happening? I can't stop this. You know, I wanted to just throw my phone, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, so I kicked off about 6 weeks ago and shared life development, personal growth type stuff.
I saw that. That's good. Get your little label across get your little marker there. I saw how you did that. That's pretty good. I am taking notes from you, sir. So I appreciate and acknowledge you and the work you're doing.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks. And again, thanks for coming on. I really, really hope and wish you the best with all those ventures. And I'm sure we'll probably connect in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Brian, and keep doing the great work you're doing.
All right. Take care. I love it.